Your Excellency, President of the General Assembly, thank you so much for that very generous introduction. Your Excellency, my very good friend, the Director General, Dr. Margaret Chang, Your Excellencies, Ministers, Your Excellencies, Ambassadors, ladies and gentlemen, dear friends. First, let me truly thank Margaret and all of you for this very kind invitation to join you here today at your 67th World Health Assembly. And may I also, before I start going through a couple of arguments here of why we should be thinking of these two things as coming together, let me truly thank WHO for the leadership that you all had in the awareness campaign that was organized by WHO, where you had a most impressive 1,700 health organizations, 8,000 hospitals, and 13 million, may I say that again, 13 million health professionals make their voice heard before Paris and express their support for an ambitious agreement. Thank you so very, very much to the health community of the world. So with your help, and the help of the health community who is not here today, what did we accomplish in Paris? Was the work worth it? Was it what we expected? Well, may I tell you that the Paris Agreement broke every single record of United Nations and every record, in fact, of multilateral negotiations in the history of our fantastic institution. We had, for the first time ever, 155 heads of state under one roof, on one day, on one topic. Never achieved before, not even in General Assembly in the United Nations when that many heads of state come, but over several days. We had, at the end, 195 governments unanimously agree. When was the last time that anybody agreed anything unanimously in the multilateral process? You don't have to answer that. 195 countries unanimously agree to intentionally change the course of the economic development of this world in order to protect the most vulnerable. We have now 177 signatures to the Paris Agreement, 175 on opening day for signatories, and we have already 17 instruments of ratification, meaning that we can actually reasonably expect the Paris Agreement to enter into force pretty well, maybe even 2 years ahead of its planned entry, which was for 2020, but we think at this rate we may actually go into force either next year or by 2018. But despite the numbers, my dear friends, let me say I think the most important thing that was broken, other than many records in Paris, was actually the fact that all the world together was able to break the myth that addressing climate change is more expensive than the benefits that we get from that. The risk-reward equation is now correct. The cost-benefit equation has now been corrected. In particular, I would say, in the relationship between climate change and health, because that link is made very, very explicitly in the preamble of the Paris Agreement, and we know that there is a double link. The first, that in addressing climate change by reducing emissions, we are preventing the worsening of health conditions around the world. And the second, that by improving so many different conditions that can be improved through climate measures, such as improving food security and water safety, we are actually improving health conditions. So frankly, let's look at those two links, because what can be better than to prevent the worst and improve the current? So to the first link, the prevention of worsening health conditions. You know, because WHO has already published your estimation that unless we do what we need to do on climate change, the direct damage to health will be anywhere between $2 to $4 billion per year by the year 2030. You know that 1/6 of all illnesses and disabilities currently are due to vector-borne diseases, and that that will rise astronomically with climate change if it's not checked. You know better than anyone else that the burden is highest on developing countries, where the mortality rate for these vector-borne diseases is actually from these diseases is 300 times that in developed countries. Now, I actually have a little bit of good news, because I do know that in most of your health budgets, let's say 95 or maybe even 97 is currently going into treatment and only 3% into prevention. And here am I arguing that actually working on climate change is your best prevention strategy. Well, the good news is, but don't tell your colleagues in other sectors, the budget for that prevention actually can come from other sectors. It doesn't necessarily have to come from you. The budget for that prevention is going to come from transportation, from energy, from cities, from infrastructure budgets, because that is going to be how we will address climate change, and you will be the beneficiaries of it. If, of course, you help in preventing worsening conditions by helping us to translate the message of why we need to address climate change, if you help us to motivate, and I will speak about that in a minute. The second link that I wanted to put before you is the fact that we are actively improving health conditions through the work that we're doing on addressing climate change. So having cleaner air through the reduction of local pollution is very well known to you. Improving, restoring degraded lands for better food security and for water safety is something that is very known to you, and certainly improves health conditions. So from those two very, very clear links, I deduce two conclusions. The first, that we cannot, and particularly developing countries, and I come from one myself, developing countries cannot pursue climate change targets for their own purpose. Developing countries, but also industrialized, but more particularly developing countries, will be pursuing their climate targets because of the sustainability planning that is being done, because of what every country wants to do with the sustainable development goals. That is how we're going to achieve the climate targets, through implementing the SDGs. Those two things are completely linked. So my first conclusion is, let us very quickly bring down the silo between SDG number 3 and SDG 13, because they are so intimately related, they cannot be separated. And my second conclusion is, in fact, and Margaret Chan was the first one who said many, many years ago that a global agreement, if it ever occurred, and this was many years ago, Margaret, but you were the first one who said, if there's ever a global agreement on climate change, that will be a global agreement on health. I am here to inform you, my dear friend Margaret, that we now have a Paris Agreement on climate change, which is actually a Paris Agreement on public health, and thank you very much for your leadership on that. So what do we do? What do we do? Because now we have the fantastic Paris Agreement, we have an infrastructure, we have a legal framework, but that is not it. That was perhaps a very, very difficult process, and one for the results for which we're all very grateful, but that is still not making a difference on the ground. Now we have to move from the vision that Paris holds to actually making a difference on the ground. We have to move from the vision to marking a different reality. Now, on the to-do list, I do know the WHO organized a health and climate conference in 2014, and you launched country profiles that were very helpful to the different ministers and to the different countries at the same time. I therefore very much welcome your second global conference on climate and health in July in Paris. But the fact is that the health community now needs a climate agenda. And I know that the XCOM is going to be looking at this. You will not be surprised that the WHO Secretariat and the Climate Secretariat have been working very closely together. So I very warmly endorse three areas that have actually already been suggested for work. The first, help us to translate. If you ask, if you do a poll, if you do a survey in most any country about what is the most urgent thing about climate change, guess what factor comes out on top? Health. Absolutely. By far. By far. So you are absolutely privileged. Your microphone is the most privileged. So please use your microphone. Help us translate why we need to work on climate change because of the health implications. Please help us, as you already have, to mobilize the awareness of the link between the health of the planet and the health of those human beings who live on the planet, because they are one and the same. You have already quantified health benefits of reducing short-lived pollutants. You've already just recently published the statistics for air pollution in 3,000 cities worldwide, actually this month. You will have to strengthen climate resilience of health systems, but this all calls for that transition, using your extraordinary bully pulpit that you have in the health sector to be able to translate what this climate actually mean for people in their own human experience, not out there in the atmosphere, because frankly that is too difficult to understand, explain, and doesn't motivate anybody to make any difference. It's about how does it affect me? How does it affect my health? How does it affect the health of my children? That is where you can really make a huge difference. The second area that you have already contemplated, of course, is to strengthen the evidence base, already based on your country profiles. And I would just suggest that at this point we have 189 countries that have presented their national climate change plans. Sadly, only 15% of them mention health. That is homework. It should be 100% of all the countries that in their national climate change plans can see that there is a very, very close link with health, and they should be pursuing climate objectives through the urgency of protecting health conditions and improving health conditions. And thirdly, you have already talked about how will you help to monitor progress. I am just here to tell you that the Climate Convention will be looking at progress, because what we have now, the National Climate Change Plans, will not get us to where the planet needs to be. But the Paris Agreement is not static. It is a dynamic framework that will evolve and will be under constant improvement over the next few decades. Every 5 years, there's going to be a checkpoint. Every 5 years, countries are going to come together and say, what have we done? Have we done enough? And how much more do we have to do? That checkpoint process, which we call a global stock day, should absolutely include the positive influence and impact that climate measures are having on health. If health is left out of the global stock take, we are not putting the human being in the center of climate change where she and he belong. And finally, could I just raise a little voice of alarm and invite all of you to swallow an alarm clock, because it's almost lunchtime. And this is the reason why I want you to swallow an alarm clock. The fact is that if over the next 5 years we do not fundamentally change what we're doing in the energy sector, in the transportation sector, in the building sector, and all of those sectors that are emitting, we are in danger of reaching a tipping point in the atmosphere that will have a direct, negative, and profound impact on health around the planet for many, many decades, and an impact that many scientists believe could not be recovered. So we have, my dear friends, 5 years to make an extraordinary difference. This is why when Margaret called me and said, Cristiana, would you come to the World Health Assembly? And I said, Margaret, I have a problem. I'm negotiating in Bonn with all of my good friends there, the ministers of environment, who are negotiating how are they going to implement the Paris Agreement. But because of the importance, because of the urgency, because of the huge impact that the health community can and must make, I'd said, yes, Margaret, I will come, and I will certainly invite the health community through you, ministers, to really take up the flag and help us with this planetary emergency that we have. So let me finalize by thanking who you think is the health community, but actually from where I stand, you are the bravest of the climate change community. You are the ones in the forefront. I thank you for everything that you have done, and I thank you in advance because I know you will do more.